You're the reason our kids are ugly, little darling. Oh, but looks ain't everything, and money ain't everything, but I love you just the same.
Well, you're the reason I've changed to beer from soda pop.
And you're the reason I never get to go to the beauty shop.
Look at yourself. Now, I wish you'd take them curlers out of your hair and go put on a little makeup and get out of that house coat before supper.
Huh. Well, let me tell you something, Conway. Considering everything that I went through today, I look like a movie star.
Yeah. Ruth Buzzy.
Thank you.
Besides that, all of our kids took after your part of the family
oh,
anyway.
Oh, they did, huh? Well, what about the ones that's bald?
Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Right? You represent the idiocy of today.
Yep.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Go. Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Jimmy on the board. S&P futures are up 25. NASDAQ futures up 250 as we're basking in the rally here, which is, you know, that's always a good thing when you do that. But the rallies are good. You know, my clients make money. Everybody makes money, I guess, during rallies. And we're back into the guys that are on CNBC all the time. And whenever we go down, they say, don't worry, just go ahead and buy stuff. And you know what? They've been right for a really long time. because of your government. We have John Lee.
I'm here.
I'm going to bore you with this for a second, John. we've been talking on the show now for a while regarding the Japanese situation, and John has been there recently. The situation being that they were getting the double whammy and the increased oil prices due to the war. And I've said this before, but for those that aren't clear, all transactions in oil are done in U.S. dollars currently. Well, there's probably some barter ones going on, but by and large, the oil trade is in U.S. dollars. So for Japan to buy oil, which they're very dependent on, they need to actually turn the yen into dollars and then turn around and buy oil with the dollars. Now, the price of oil is going up, and oh, by the way, the price of the yen is going down in value. So they're getting a double whack here. And the yen, now when the yen is in yen per dollar, went from, you know, under 160 per dollar to like 163. And 160 is sort of their panic point where they go, it's like too high. So they've been sort of pouring money into the system, which John can talk to regarding inflation over there, where they never used to have any. So all of a sudden they're trying to save the yen, which means they have to use dollars to buy yen. All right, so where the hell do they get the dollars? Well, part of where they get them is they own a boatload of U.S. treasuries. So they can cash in some of their U.S. treasuries or not participate in the next auction, just let them roll over and use those dollars to turn around and buy yen. But they haven't been doing a very good job because yen got up to 260. Well, let me see exactly where it got up to. 163.80. That whole area. So almost 164. I don't think it touched 164. It might have been one day. But they're basically doing a horse bleep job at protecting their yen. So the U.S. cabinet, led by our president, meets at Camp David. And evidently on the table was Hegseth, our treasurer, our secretary of the treasury.
You mean Keg's breath?
Yeah, I mean he's decided we're gonna put $10 billion.
Hegseth is Department of War.
No, he's not. Oh, who's the Bessent? Sorry, Bessent. You're right. They all seem the same to me. But anyway, it's another issue. But they decide they're gonna help Japan intervene. Which means they're going to pile in, we are going to pile in and buy a bunch of Japanese yen using U.S. dollars. Now, where are we going to get the dollars? Well, who knows? Where are we going to tax for it? I don't know. We can't do that. We got the great, beautiful bill. We're going to borrow? Maybe we are. But by and large, and 9 o'clock, make that 9:30 on the 30th, which would have been last Thursday. Now, Wednesday, the Fed came out and basically said they weren't going to lower rates anytime soon. The market goes in the crapo, and all of a sudden on Thursday morning, we fly up. And I remember all day Thursday, Friday, saying, what in God's name? Something had to happen for all of a sudden everybody to be so happy that the pile into the market, and it runs up way, way more than it ever went down. So somebody somewhere, is this a Fed event? What is this? Well, it turns out at 9:30 in the morning, the Treasury injected $10 billion into buying yen, which means they put $10 billion into the system, which I'm guessing they just wrote the check for. And I don't know where that money came from, but I don't think anybody went out and taxed for it or anything. So they and Japan had this combined intervention, which dropped the yen down from 163 to now it's 156.80. So we're pushing $7, which is, for God's sake, it's 4% or almost 5% in a currency market. That is massive. And oh, by the way, as we have J.D. Vance, a couple people on the show were talking about how J.D. Vance has become our new moral man. He's going after all people that steal money from the government. If you look at the movement in the NASDAQ futures, I'll kick that up in a second here before I lose these graphs because they're all five-day graphs. You can get this stuff on CNBC, by the way, if you care to look. If you look at the we'll just look at the U.S., and we'll look at the NASDAQ futures. And if you go back to the same Thursday morning, I think I looked last night, I'll confirm here, that between 9 and 9:30, essentially a half hour before we and the Japanese decided to inject money into the yen, The NASDAQ futures went up. This is on where we're on. We're on the 30th now. Would be, what else? 703. So on the 30th, we are 28th, 29th, 30th. On the 30th, we were trading at whatever in the morning at 9 o'clock. We were at 9 o'clock. I got the wrong one here. I went to 5-day. At 9 o'clock, all of a sudden, between 9 and 9:30, which means a half hour before the intervention, before the rest of us knew when the intervention was, the NASDAQ futures went up 500 points. Well, that's a problem to me. Now, to most people, I guess it's not a problem, but to me, it's a little bit of a problem. And I don't know what the, you know, what are we doing here, guys? I mean, this is insane. We're talking, let's see, at 9:35, the first number here. We were at the night before 7:30 at 9:30. We are at 24,859, and we're in at 9:35. We're up 600 points. So like right before or right simultaneously, people started buying this, and you know, and I. So my question is, now J.D. Vance, he's after all things that are not good. Now, is he checking the trading sheets for everybody and everybody's family who was at Camp David, do you think? Any friends? I'm going to say no.
You know when the corruption gets so bad that you laugh at it?
Yeah.
You know, it's beyond, as our favorite author said, you know, we have the best politicians money can buy.
Yeah.
And that's not even the case anymore. They, you know, when they get in now, I've said it several times in the show that I used to make fun of all these countries in Southeast Asia, Malaysia and Vietnam and so forth with the corruption. I'm at the opinion now we are just as bad.
Well, at 14:45, 14:50, which is what, 10 to 3, on Wednesday, we were at 25,000 roughly in the over 14:50. It's Eastern time, so we dropped down. This is when what's his name was speaking. We dropped down to a low of 24,546 is where we close. So we drop, you know, how many points is that with the guy talking? For God's sake, it's 500 or thereabouts. And that was all made up, totally made up by this yen thing by 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock Central Time the next morning with the Japanese yen thing. So what it means is, you know, with us up again today here, what it means is the people who have been correct really for 20 years is that don't worry, the market is in the government safe zone. It has become the world's piggy bank of everybody here, and they will do anything they possibly can to keep it up, which is interesting because a lot of people have decided they don't need any protection. I mean, we still are doing the protected index program for a lot of people. And we're doing something, you know, similar to that for people with concentration issues. So we still have a lot of clients that are concerned about protection and concerned about, you know, what if all this stuff doesn't happen, or you know, we don't. If one of these days they can't do that, but by and large, I mean, the people who come on TV and say, "Don't worry, no matter how bad it looks, the government's going to bail your ass out," they are pretty much stone cold correct. I mean, you can't say they're wrong for 20 years, right? So here's yet another example. We look like we're going to crap all Wednesday, and the next morning, they pulled $10 billion basically out of their ass and threw it in the market. So, I mean, that's a real deal. I mean, it's not something that you cannot. But how much time do we spend on Thursday, Jimmy, on the show saying what the hell happened? Well, this is what happened. At least we found out, eh?
Yes, we did.
So there you go. So John, what is? The situation over in Japan? You were there 6 months ago. I mean, it's got to have gotten a little bit worse, but those guys haven't had inflation for, what, 20 years And all of a sudden they have some?
It's the same issue. When I was talking, not that I talk to a lot of people, I'm not a BBC News reporter here. But the average person is just like here, Tom. They, one lady that sold me a watch, I bought a Seiko watch. She said, you know, the stock market is doing great here. Now, this was 6 months ago. And she said, however, I'm going to tell you, the average person sees no benefit from that. So the average wages have not risen, you know, they've not risen at all. And, you know, the cost of living goes up. And so, and you know, the knock-on effect there is the same thing we've all read about, you know, the demographic crisis. People are not getting married and having children, not because they don't want to, because nobody can afford to, by and large. The knock-on effect in that society is devastating, and we should not be putting our nose up in the air because, you know, it is not that far from every other developed country. No, it's just, you know, the stagnation of the lower middle. I won't even talk about the lower class. But the lower middle and the middle class, it's the stagnation. If you get the right degree at the right technical university, yes, you'll have a job. But, you know, it's a tough go. It's a very tough go there.
It's we're all into this economic...
Guys, they haven't had inflation, but they've had stagflation for like 30 years. Their economy literally has.
But they never really had inflation, Jimmy. They never had. It's the one thing they didn't have. They got everything else you're talking about, but they never. The individual people. I mean, your interest rate was what, 0.5% for how many years?
Less than that. I have a buddy in Japan. When they wanted to get the economy going, he was allowed to borrow at 0.5.
I'll take it up right here. The because. CNBC is not a bad, not a bad source for this stuff because you can make your graph go kind of go anywhere. So I'll go to all on this chart. We're at 2.82 now, which is like really high for these guys. I'm going to say from the last time it was 2.82. Take a guess, Mr. Lee.
No idea.
7/19/1996. Between then and now, it has been below that. It was below 2 for God knows how long here. And we've got down to the low tick was minus 0.16 in 2019. So their interest rates were actually a little bit below zero.
Jesus.
Yikes. So they've been pretty much zero from 2016... 2006, 6/15, they were 0.5%, and that 9/20/23, they were 0.6%, and then they started to go up. So in the last 3 years, they've just kind of kept going up and up and up. So you're talking about a federal government over there, where they have twice as much debt per citizen than we do. Our debt is now up to like almost 130% of our GDP, which it, I don't think it ever has been, not even during wartime, maybe somewhere during World War II. Theirs is 250%. So the last thing they need to do is to have the interest rates go up with the inflation going with it. Because you can't, as the Irish say, you can't get blood out of a turnip. How much more can you tax? You can only tax people who got money, right?
Well, the biggest thing, Chief, is you have to understand, they own their debt. They're not like us.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jimmy.
They own their debt. They don't have a lot of foreign countries that own part of the Japanese debt. It's owned by the Japanese people.
I bet there's some. Well, then I guess you can, if you're a Milton Friedmanite, you would say you don't have a problem. All you got to do is renege on your people. Somebody asked him once in class, by the way, said, do you worry about our national debt? And the answer was no, for the exact reason you're talking about, Jimmy. Because if the U.S. owns, like World War II, virtually all the debt here was, you know, people going around and buying war bonds, right? So his point was, it's like the husband owing the wife $50. The house is flat. The home is flat. I don't know. I don't know at 250%, though, Jimmy, if that means health. You're right. It probably is way more their own debt than ours, because we get, what's ours, about 45% outside, somewhere in the 40s.
Yeah.
Used to be over 50 a little bit, but I think it's down from that. So, yeah, it's less of a problem, but what does that really mean? I mean, does that mean you just say, okay, guys, we're not paying it off or what? Or we're not sending an interest check? I guess you could do that. I mean, in theory you could, but it wouldn't exactly... That'd go over like a stink bomb in church, wouldn't it? All of a sudden, we're not making... I guess they could say that. We're just not making an interest payment.
Well, you do have to understand it's a very different... And John can chime in. A very different mentality. They will do what the government asks them to do. Even if it means, like, taking a hit in the pocketbook, they'll do it. They are... Think like an ant farm.
Well, you can't generalize to that extent. Some people are not going to be happy that they invested in a place and don't have the money, because John's saying that they're all kind of hurting. All of a sudden, if they're investing in the government, and all of a sudden that's no good, it's like putting money in a bank here in 1932 and having the bank close. That didn't go over real well. Just saying, you know. But no, the question we had with Larissa last week, and I'll get your guys' opinion of it. I mean, she was talking about how we're steadily nipping away at pretty much every man in this country, with some people doing incredibly much better. And so far, we have essentially taken it, for lack of a better term. And so what do you do? You know, we're going to have an election. I suppose we could vote some people out and think that that's a solution. And, you know, maybe it is, I guess. I don't know. But it's, I guess it is our solution, but... I'm not ready for a sandwich sign walking up and down the street. Sure as hell not going to get a gun, or not even a water balloon for that. So what exactly is the edge here? Is it the ballot box? Is it? I mean, we're watching things go downhill while some people seem to be making all the dough. And you know, the amount of money made by some of these companies. Look at the stock prices of I'm going to say Microsoft, which we have big holdings in. The stock is up from. I'll sort of chart up here. I mean, it had gone down, but now it went from, where are we? In July 30th, we're 390. Now we're 472. With 7 billion shares outstanding? That's, God's sake, it's $80 times 7. $560 billion in market cap in 5 days. Okay, that's a lot, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, this is like amazing funny money. Well, it's not funny money, but it's numbers you can't even comprehend. I mean, these are numbers that, I mean, when NVIDIA has got 25 billion shares, I'll say every time the thing moves a buck, all you got to do is keep telling yourself it's $250 billion. I mean, or 25. I mean, if it was 10 bucks, it's 250. I mean, some of these stocks have moved more in the last week than the most expensive company in the world was valued in 2010.
You know, as a stock, which I have a personal involvement in, as you know, Accenture, it went up $20. It was 150, went 155, went to 175 last week. It went down another $10. What on earth would cause that in 1 week?
Jen's talking about a stock that was on 723, which wasn't that long ago, in case you looked, was 138, and now it's 169. The stock is up. Now, what did these guys say or do to make it worth 20% more in 7 days?
No announcement, no nothing. So I was telling, you know, my guess is they had their, you know, their dinners with the investment bankers and said, things look good. Or, I don't know. Tom, you know that world better than I do.
I think it has a lot has to do with government money. I mean, where would the market be if these guys didn't put the $10 billion in on Thursday morning? I don't think it would be here. But the message to just about everybody is, and by the way, it's been a message that I wish I would have heard a long time ago, that somehow or another after, and Carl traces it always all the way back to 87, every time the market's in trouble, the government now throws money at it, to the point where you know, what are we doing here? We got our interest rates up higher. Nobody seems to care. I'm going to look at the 10-year rate. Well, I'll look at the 30-year rate because some people look at that as more of a 30-year rate and 7.28. Well, we'll go back to 7.17 was 5%. Now it's 5.3 or 5. It was 5.04. Now it's 5.27. So that's a pretty darn good move in a 30-year rate. In the meantime, your S&P, your spider, on that date was 7.21. We're 7.46. Now we're 7.50. We're actually up. We went down for a little bit. Now we're up. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be or whatever. I'm just these are normal relationships that for whatever reason, the people that come in all the time when the market's down and say, "Don't worry about it. Just buy the dip." Fact is, the reason why they get away with it is because they've been right. And the variable in there always seems to be the government finds a way to put money in there. But now the government is, you know, where are we getting the $10 billion? But if you're one of the people who knew about it on Wednesday or Thursday at the Camp David meeting and you got in ahead of it, you're fine, right? What do you care if the thing crashes 3 years from now? I mean, this kind of larceny is you know, if are they sending that letter out to every MAGA person or just the inside ones? I think just the inside ones would be my guess. But now where's the top? We're not that far away from all-time highs here, I don't think. Do we deserve to be there? With the war, with interest rates up? I don't know. But we were up during COVID, right? COVID was a depression, for God's sake, for 2 years. And yet the market was up. Now, the other people paid a price in the inflation. You know, but that's okay, I guess. So that's where we are. But you have to play the cards you're dealt, though, right? I mean, that's kind of, you know, I had an interesting conversation at my dinner yesterday. We were talking about the Fauci thing, and I've had talks with a few people on this, and it's pretty interesting. I don't know, I think, you know, some of the people on the show have certainly, well, maybe it was always in me. But I don't really like to see people get away with doing really bad stuff. I mean, I don't know, maybe it's my Southside cop parents' background or something. So we had a discussion yesterday regarding the Fauci stuff. And I wrote something to all you guys last week saying I would love to see somebody, I don't know if you want to call it a special prosecutor or a study, if we had, where we to find out, okay, where did all the money come from that went to these Wuhan and the stuff in Ukraine? Was the biological warfare always that sort of a under the table, we don't know where the money came from sort of thing? I just, in a minute and a half, I had 10 or 15 questions I'd want answered, down to were there drug company monies in this? Did Fauci, was he influenced when he said wear a mask, when it turned out he knew they weren't any good, that kind of thing? I mean, who was part and parcel to this, and usually got to follow the money in something like this? I would love to see. Anyway, the discussion yesterday was, you know, we can't really be looking back and what is, you know, Ted Cruz. I said, no, I'm not worried about Ted Cruz. I would like to see somebody of, you know, beyond reproach take this one apart or pick five of our worst fiascos of the last 10 years. And just take one or two of them and investigate them through and find out, is it the same people? Where's the money coming from? Is it CIA money? Is it come out of this bank account? Who wrote the check? Who should have been the check and balance? I mean, there's a million places to go on this if you really want to do it. Well, the conversation essentially degraded into, I don't think Ted Cruz, I don't trust him as far as I can throw him. Okay, name me some person from either side of the aisle or a retired general, maybe even a retired president. I won't go with Biden. Is there anybody that you would trust to do this properly, sort of like a Sam Ervin after the Watergate or a Dan Inouye with Iran-Contra? And the answer unanimously was no. We can't even conceive of one person who would have the backing of this government to go and wherever this leads you and find out who all the no-goodniks were.
Look,
that is probably the most sad commentary I've heard in 10 years.
To say they have the backing of the government.
I mean, the backing of Trump, saying, okay, wherever it goes, go. I mean, when I go back to Harry Truman, well, I don't, wasn't there, but Harry Truman was all over the people stealing from the armed forces during World War II, and he was very effective because Roosevelt was right behind him.
Yeah, and so, you know, fair enough, Tom, but, you know, it's so politicized, and that's why people have this attitude. It's so politicized that people try to... Rand Paul did not do us any favors by threatening to put Fauci in jail for 6 years. I mean, if he, he I always thought he was a somewhat, independent-minded Republican, but, if he was truly interested, I mean, he could have done it. And, I was astounded when it happened and so forth. But no, it's so politicized. It's used by both parties to make points. I mean, this thing with Fauci, obviously by the right.
Well, but so, I mean, the fact is, the guy was in there making these decisions influenced by somebody. We should never have financed a thing in Wuhan. Where did the money come from? How did he use North Carolina to funnel money? Are those guys going to go to jail? I mean, what is the deal here?
That was public knowledge. I mean, they admitted that they had helped fund that lab. Okay, we had relationships with that lab, and we were talking to them about improving their safety standards. I mean, that was...
We had a defense department that said we weren't going to do it, and we had an executive order from Obama saying don't do it.
Yeah, so...
They did it anyway.
And then you're talking about funding the lab. So, no, we helped build the lab, okay, because we were doing all this stuff.
I know. The question is why, and where did the money come from, and where did they get the approval to do that? Was it an off-balance sheet type of thing? Or how does Fauci get involved in moving money around for bio warfare, for God's sake?
Well, okay, so it's whether it's bio warfare, it's an awful strong statement here. I mean, they've proven without it, they've said, look at, the virus may have escaped because of lack of safety concerns there, but they do not think it was in any way biowarfare.
But it was created by us.
It's
a man-made virus.
Yeah. So, so it's a man-made virus here, and the gain of function, we do man-made viruses all the time.
Okay. My point is, they seem to have been told to not do it. So I would like to know. Okay, when somebody tells you that and you do it anyway, where do you get the dough? did it come out of some other spot? And was it a legitimate check written by the U.S. government? Was it written by the CIA? Was it written by private donors? I'd like to know how you do all this stuff, John. I mean, it should not have been done. And then we spent how many weeks thinking it came out of the fish market when they knew it didn't?
I don't know. You keep talking over me, so I guess I'm not going to give an opinion here.
Well, I'm saying... But your thing is, you don't want to know. I'm questioning why don't we want to know is my only question.
I don't, because right now it's so politicized because every side wants to go up against each other. I don't think there's any doubt that they went too far in these restrictions. I think they went too far because they were afraid. They didn't know what was happening. They didn't know what the virus was going to do.
I mean,
I lost a cousin, I lost an uncle to the virus, so, which, of course, according to some people, it was no big deal. Well, I mean, I lost two people.
I'm just, once in a while, John, and this is the same, I get very well, very far in the argument yesterday, once in a while, whether it's the Nixon thing, whether it's just, you just can't let bygones be bygones, because too much money, we paid seven companies millions of dollars to produce vaccines, and five of them never even came up with a vaccine. They still kept the money.
I mean, well, because money in R&D. I mean, what do you think? This is a gumball machine that you put.
My point is, when this kind of money, when these money. My only point is, and I don't know where this is going to end, John. I mean, I don't know where it would lead. That's why I just sent out the questions. I mean, where did the dough come from? The idea that Fauci's wife was the one who was essentially regulating him, how does that happen?
Dumb. The dough came from the National Science Foundation.
Okay.
In the State Department. That's where the dough came from.
All right.
That, documented.
All right, so the National Science Foundation, after a presidential executive order saying don't do it.
Before that, first of all, the lab does a lot of research. It's not just this. Okay. I mean, in the relationship that we built with other countries from a scientific standpoint, it was deemed that it was important that we do have these relationships. So, yeah.
So I mean, you could 100% be right. Why can't I just say, you know, once in a while, I just want to check it?
Well, but, you know, it has been checked.
By who?
Have you really figured out, have you really investigated where did the money come from? Or are you just asking the question?
I mean, no, how am I going to find out?
Well, you can fucking Google it and find out. You can
Okay. I mean, I'm saying there's enough money and there's enough people dead to go back and say what happened. That's my only point. Someplace, somewhere, it's not just bygones be bygones. And maybe this should be one. Maybe not. Maybe it's some other case we pick out. You know, what about, you know, there's this whole idea that we shove it under the rug every single time. I'm not so sure we should have shoved the Nixon thing under the rug.
I mean, I'm shoving this under the rug, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I mean,
I think that we have investigated the thing. We've talked about it. You know, it doesn't help that, you know, where the virus did originate, and I think it's a better than 50% chance it came from a lab, at least. You know, that's.
I'm going to roll that up to 90, but go ahead.
Okay. And I think they didn't do it for political reasons because they didn't want to upset the Chinese. They shut their door. Every researcher that was involved here, all the healthcare officials were told to shut up or go to jail. Because the Chinese did not want to be responsible for having an influenza epidemic that cost how many million people? So there's fault to go around here, but I'm not sure that I buy this. If you really, I mean, you know, next week let's talk about, you know, let's do the research about, okay, how much money did we fund this, and what was the type of funding that was applied to it.
That's just the start. I mean, were there drugs that could have been used that were better? Why did they tell people? Why did they tell people to get vaccines when you already had it? I mean, there's a lot of questions here I'd like answered. I don't know if I'll ever get them. I'm not sure I will, but I'm not just gonna. Well, nobody's going to do what I want to do. So there's no question on that anyway. But my point is, somewhere along, I mean, it's the same thing with this insider trading.
Now, that part I'm completely in.
Okay, well, okay, what I'm saying.
Sure. But guys, I got to get going here. All I've right. got a set training session.
All right. We have Mr. Flanagan. Johnny, with us?
I'm here, Tom. Morning.
Help me with this, will you?
Well, you know, the Fauci hearing really kind of focused people on something that, you know, they in some sense had to move on from. It's now almost ancient history, but certainly to the people who felt like they were bamboozled, it's just as fresh and horrifying as it always was. But it by focusing on Fauci, you know, it's easy to forget all the other people who fell in line, usually along political lines, right underneath them, from, you know.
Well, careful with that, because the guy's been there for five presidents.
Yeah, but I mean, the local, you know, not just the health industry, but every governor of whatever political stripe more or less went along with what he wanted. And there was never any, you know, sense that I ever heard coming from him or from anybody higher up than the governors. Wait a minute, you're going a little too fast in this direction. Don't shut everything down. We advise against that. If there had been some temperance at some point in this, you know, things could have been different. When Trump was pushing Fauci to relax the lockdowns, and Fauci didn't, you know, and then they got the teacher unions involved. And being a veteran of a teacher's union, I can vouch for the fact that, you know, anything that allows teachers to do less work for more money is okay with the teacher's union. I mean, we kept the schools closed in Illinois for 2 years, and we had a strike over reopening. That's the stuff that hit people here locally in any part of the country in the hardest possible way. Fauci was just this kind of hideous peak of the umbrella that everybody could point to, but there were surely lots of people below him who were more culpable than he was in the way things played out, and it was totally ununiform across the country. This is why the U.S. compared to a lot of other countries has a kind of a great teaching lesson here, where there was some freedom on how far you could go, and some states just went completely off the cliff, and others did not. And they, it shows in the different mortality rates, and I think the general happiness of the people after all this stuff is, turned into history now. But look at Pritzker. I mean, how many emergency declarations did he get away with? The legislature never said word one about it.
Well, John, what I'm trying to find here is, and I'm being very clumsy about it, or maybe people just don't want to listen to what I'm talking about, which is possible too. Being on the board of the SIBO, every single thing that came up that was a rule violation or something, every single one, you don't have to go back. If you find out something bad happened like 6 months ago, do you really every single time go into it and have a headline in the Wall Street Journal that somebody was cheating on the SIBO or something? You don't want to do. You can't go forward when your eyes are always looking backward. I absolutely get that part, but I also know that when you have something really bizarre, when people are dying and a lot of money is changing hands like this, and it appears that money seemed to come out of nowhere to do stuff that they were told not to do, I don't know if this is the one that you focus on. But someplace, somewhere, everything can't just be, if you stole the money 6 months ago, okay, well, then we're never going to go back and look. I mean, it's like the Epstein thing. We never, that Wayne and Andrew bring up all the time, the same sort of people are still doing this international money laundering, and we never look back. And here it is, three generations later, they're doing the same damn thing. So I don't know what the balance is. I mean, you don't always want to be turning around and looking back, because you're supposed to be looking forward, but you also can't let everything, as long as you get away with it for 6 months, say it's okay when it's ongoing. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to strike the balance here. And in every conversation I have with somebody, it ends up into, well, what do you mean? What are you against Fauci? What I'm saying is, someplace, somewhere, we have to make sure that it doesn't happen again, or at least give somebody the idea that we'll be looking out for it next time. It just saying, well, it's ancient history, to hell with it. I don't think you can do that. Now, which ones? I'm not smart enough to pick the one you go after once in a while, but it's like the police now. To me, they don't do squat. Okay, somebody, you get a car stolen, somebody does this, there's a burglary. I know they don't have the personnel to go through like you would do on TV, CPI or something, where they're going to fingerprints and DNA for like a home invasion or something. But I think maybe if there's 20 of them sitting on the desk, you pull two of the folders out and you look at them. You do something. You have to give somebody the idea that somebody's looking at something. And I don't know if it's one of 20, two of 20, four of 20. I'm not that smart, and I don't know what the personnel is. But I know you just can't say, well, we can't touch any of these things, and the hell with it. But I know that's not the solution, I think. Do you agree or not? You don't.
Well, my fear is that, at some level, and it's a bigger level than I could quite get my head around, this was not so much a health crisis event at all, but it was just an experiment in domination of populations.
Well, I'm sure some of that too.
Well, I mean, it was the.
I don't know how you investigate that, though. Do you?
Well, I mean, but it would take down a lot of companies and a lot of countries. And the UN, there'd be no stopping any kind of a juggernaut that went after the guilty parties for that. But that's still in place, Tom. What I'm saying is, the next time this comes around, like you were saying, it would be better if we had some kind of, handle on what we had done that was right or wrong in a similar past event. But I'm convinced that the next time an event comes around, it's going to be cast in a way just like this was, as being like nothing we've ever seen before, and we can't use the playbook that we thought we were assembling here, and it's back to square one, and you're going to have even more draconian measures and stifling of dissent and everything else. And those are the things that I think people paid. If you ask the average person, I mean, I agree completely with what John was saying before he signed off. You know, if you lost somebody, and somebody's just telling you, you know, that was the price you had to pay for our stupidity, you're like, that's not going to go down ever. That story will be told for generations. But that isn't pain that registers at a very high level. So I think it's just as likely it's going to happen again on an even broader, you know, more terrifying scale. Once they saw what they could get away with, and by they, I mean the health industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the, you know, globalists, the Communist Party in China, and there's all sorts of things that we're all sort of, you know, figuring out how can we pull together for what we see as our long-range goals here. That mechanism is probably stronger now because of COVID than it was before COVID.
Well, if there's a shred of evidence, and it's somebody withheld drugs they knew that knew worked in favor of ones that they were getting paid to put out there, I got a real problem with that. I mean, that's not something I want to let go.
But you know, that the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry have been doing that kind of snow job for generations.
Okay, well, maybe
if you've got a more expensive medication, you know, that will work maybe less well or not work at all, but they can push it on people. Well, they're not going to push the cheap medicine that does work. That's why we've got people being prescribed Remdesivir, of all things, which probably killed as many people as it was given to.
Okay, what I'm saying is somewhere we keep wandering, whoever you talk to or me talk to, maybe it's me, we go back into this. It's been a long thing about this. It's been a long thing about. I'm saying somewhere along the line, you got to take a look at one of them, and if it's there, you got to go, okay, it's got to stop. I mean, if you don't, you get this whole. You know, it's like, you know, me talking about, you know, did these people front run this currency thing? It's been going on for 50 years. What exactly does that mean? What does that mean? That means for the next 50 years, I got to put up with it, or someplace somewhere is somebody going to say stop? I mean, if COVID is the spot, you're right. There's no doubt that, you know, the next high blood pressure medication maybe is better, maybe isn't. All of a sudden, it costs five times as much as the one before. If it's better, if it's five times better, I guess that's okay. But if it's not, I mean, we all know there's kind of been this blend all along of this. You know, we also know that the people who used to go to doctors' offices were the best looking women on earth. I mean, we know how this works, but. But if this sometimes or another, sometimes, you know, something gets so obvious that you got to say this is as far as you can go. I mean, we know you've been doing. We know there's been a little front running on trading for a long time, but this is it. You can't do this. I mean, if we're never going to do that, how do we ever stop it? I guess is my question. Too much of my south side mentality coming out here. I know.
Well, you know, I guess at some level everybody was culpable in worsening what happened under COVID. I'd even say, you know, as far as I was concerned personally, I, you know, decided against talking to a lot of people about what I really thought, because I was afraid of you know, it would mean even more ostracization and marginalization.
And you're already pretty ostracized.
Yeah, but
just kidding.
But people, you know, I mean, I didn't want to admit to people I didn't know well that I never took the vaccine. And I didn't really want to bring up the subject because I thought I'm just setting myself up for, you know, ridicule and humiliation and a smear campaign that I don't need, you know, pushing 70 years old. I got other things to worry about. So I was, you know, I played the cowardly role to some extent too. I could have probably been more forceful and gone out and picketed or anything else. I don't know if it would have done anything or not. I suspect that it wouldn't have. That's how I can, you know, apologize to myself for not having done more. But this is what was so successful about COVID, was it wasn't diminishing people's ability to speak up and say what they really thought.
Well, they sent a letter out to doctors in Illinois that if you went against the grain, you're going to lose your license.
You pull your license. Well, you think, imagine what anybody in a profession has worked. You know.
So how come everybody agrees with all these little issues, and yet when I say let's take an investigation of everything that happened here and put somebody real in charge of it, why does everybody disagree with me?
where is that person, Tom?
Well, okay. And how would you know? Well, that's a totally separate problem. There's not one person we trust in this country. Maybe that says it all. There's got to be somebody.
There won't be anybody with a consensus to back them up.
Well, I mean, Colin Powell's still alive. I mean, somebody at that level.
Oh, he was compromised in other ways.
We're not looking at perfection. I'm saying we used to have somebody that we did. Anybody bitch when they made Dan Inouye the investigator of Iran-Contra, or Sam Irvin? Was Sam Irvin for Nixon? He was a guy that everybody said, okay, that's the guy. Right?
Well, Iran-Contra and Watergate are nothing like COVID.
But I'm saying, what we're on the subject of, could we pick somebody on either side of the aisle, somebody in the cabinet? I would, if I was to pick a person, I don't know if she wants to do this, I would let somebody like Condoleezza Rice do something like this.
It would be like, you know, the Frank Church hearings on, you know, assassinations of the U.S. And that was pretty uncomfortable stuff, and people believed Frank Church.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We've done it before.
What have we gotten out of those hearings, Tom?
Well, we put Otto Kerner in jail because we didn't like this thing he wrote.
Well, that big effing deal, you know, put an elderly man in jail, and we still got the cities worse than they ever were. You know?
Well, but he wrote was verbatim what happened, right?
Right, and that's why.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, Otto Kerner was
taking away his megaphone.
After the riots in '68, was it Johnson? Somebody said we need to find out what the hell happened. So they put Otto Kerner, very well respected. Was he a judge at the time, or was he? Well, he wasn't governor. He was judge, right? Or was he?
Wasn't he appellate? He was the Illinois appellate court. Or something?
Yeah, he was an appellate court before he became governor, right? Or was it after?
Oh, he had just been governor. I think the transition was in '68. I think in that election.
So he ended up heading this commission, and they came out with the Kerner report, and it basically said that a lot of the government programs, what they're doing to some of the families, lower economic class families, which a lot of them happen to be black. It wasn't just black. We were in danger of making, essentially creating a permanent underclass. Wasn't that the conclusion, John?
Yeah.
And everybody said, wait a minute. That's not what we wanted to hear. And what have we done? I mean, you know, somehow or another, a lot of government programs and other reasons, I don't know, moral issues, lack of church, lack of family, whatever it is, we've essentially got what I consider countrywide a permanent underclass of every color, not just one. I mean, if you follow up, read parts of the Kerner report and then read, which I got to find this thing. John, you're good at this. Who was the guy, the people at the Washington Post that wrote the article? It wasn't labeled the Horseshoe of Despair, but that was the guy's main line, right? Where he went from West Virginia down to, you know, south across and back up into Missouri, and it looked like a big horseshoe. And he went from state to state, and a lot of times the people were white, sometimes they're black, sometimes they were whatever. And he just went from state to state and county to county and talked about how miserable things were for people. It's exactly, you read that and you read your Kerner report and you go, bingo, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was the double wide, the two or three trailers that were hooked together in West Virginia? How many checks were going into the place in various, and nobody ever left the trailers. I don't know how they got their food, but they had, the kid supposedly was autistic, but they wouldn't let anybody examine him, right? He'd never been to the doctor, but he was getting a check for being autistic or something. And everybody was getting unemployment checks. There were like three generations in these two or three trailers, right? And how in what's the county in was it Alabama that what percentage of the people were on long-term disability? And he interviewed this one lady who had been working in nursing homes, and she had a bad back or something, and she was on Social Security long-term disability. And they said, well, you know, you seem like you still got, you know, some brain cells working. She goes, I've never known a person who had a job sitting down. I've been pulling people out of bed since I was 18. And it, by 50, my back gave out. Give me a job sitting down, I'll go to work tomorrow. No job. Now she's on a long-term disability. It was just, every story was one was more horrible than the next, wasn't it? It was exactly predicted by what Kerner was talking about. And that, you know, we're like, the rest of us are sort of paying for it. And every month, you know, we talk about the tick down in the amount of people that are working versus not working, and how dangerous that is, and how we're getting to a. And a lot of this stuff kind of comes together. We talk about, doesn't it? And yeah. And I mean, now all of a sudden, because we pour $10 billion into the yen, everybody who's got a 401k or an IRA or a stock, everybody, the world is great again, right? That's where we are today. So, but is that our future? We just keep pouring money in and have the market go up and everybody's happy?
I just think that the failures that we've been talking about are so, you know, deeply interwoven with the system that we, you know, by and large support, you know, our political system, our party system, that if we really want to untangle what went wrong with COVID, there aren't going to be any survivors. There aren't going to be any people truthful enough to say what really has to be done to prevent something like that from happening again. As long as we have the other stuff in place that we do, it's just as easy to subvert, you know, a well-meaning politician, you know, 20 years from now as it was during COVID. And let alone a sinister politician who's perfectly happy to, like, you know, bring down the boom on their entire population and watch them struggle and go out of business and die. It seems to have enjoyed the prospect of most. That's how ludicrous it became. Proving that you could be more horrible than the governor in the next state when it came to, you know, trying to do the impossible and stamp out this vaccine. This is what the Chinese tried to do with these horrible lockdowns after our COVID experience. And, you know, imprisoning people, nailing them into their, you know, apartments. Just, you know, we're fully capable of that kind of stupidity, Tom, and I guess always will be. And there isn't anybody around, any single figure, who could emerge from COVID being untainted enough to make enough people believe what he or she had to say about what we should have done better. I just think that the investigation is just as corrupted as the stuff that went into the horrors that we experienced. It's not going to be something that's going to clean the air and make people feel like we finally figured out what went wrong.
It's a pretty horrible...
It'll be like the Kennedy assassination. We'll never...
That's a pretty horrible statement, but I'm not saying you're not right. I'm just saying... I really don't want you to be, let's put it that way.
But when I've seen how... You know, and there have been other stabs at this, like the monkeypox breakout and measles. I mean, there's all sorts of blips that have happened since COVID, and right away you got every, you know, health official with any kind of visibility, you know, mouthing off on it, and, you know, just waiting to see how it plays, and, you know, everybody else is waiting to see, you know, how bad is this going to get, and, you know, and all of this is just the kind of culture we've been, you know, we're accustomed to now, that nobody wants to be foolish if something really bad does happen. And there are always plagues and outbreaks of disease. This is nothing new in human history. But we are less well equipped to measure what needs to be done or what we shouldn't do than ever before. And I blame the just over-the-top response to COVID. And everybody finally realized, gee, that was really dumb what we did. But that doesn't mean we're going to be smart the next time it happens, because it won't happen the same way. I can guarantee.
Well, they had a
especially if it's an experiment gone haywire, as this seems to have been, just like probably Lyme disease was to some extent too. None of that has ever really been cleared up enough to my satisfaction to say, here's what we better not ever do again, because nobody will admit to having done anything at all.
Well, there was a lady who was on CNBC, and evidently going back to, I don't know, Jimmy, we talked about this when you were on. I think it was before Eisenhower. There has been a study every 4 years, not that any presidents, you know, the new guy coming in changed it all that much. There essentially is, she had these in her hands. There's these big, thick manuscripts, they're probably, you know, 500 pages, 400 pages, on what to do if you have an epidemic breakout, some kind of a pandemic. She goes, every time, every 4 years, maybe the president, the new president coming in doesn't even know about it, they review these documents. And every year, every time they do it, there's a few changes, and you know, based on technology and so forth. And she goes, but there's a stack of them sitting there. She goes, when this started, nobody even said, let me look at one of those. Nobody even looked at them. That's pretty scary. They never even looked at them. This is what we should do. Here's the steps you should take. She goes, they never even opened them. After like 30 years of doing these things. How do you write? If you wrote that in a book, you couldn't sell a copy, could you?
No.
God. So, hey, when, since it's more Snacks and Jacks, and you know, my clients are involved, and I'm doing stuff for people, and I am so concerned about, and I have been for a while, but it doesn't mean we're not, you know, along the market, which we pretty much are everywhere. But we're protected. How long can this go, John, that we have these incredible valuations? Some people make, you know, the money is being made. Some of these companies are 11, 12, 13, 14 times revenue, which is higher than they were in 2000 when everything collapsed. I'm not predicting a collapse or anything like that. But how can we have a market that is essentially based on whenever it looks like it might be going down, some politician pulls $10 billion basically out of their ass from someplace. Where that $10 billion actually came from, I have no idea. Do you think it went to Congress and they voted over Wednesday night to give them $10 billion to spend on Japanese yen? It seems like there's an amazing amount of stuff these guys can do, and it's not just Trump. Everybody seems if they can miraculously come up with the money whenever they want to do anything with it. I mean, it's crazy. What is the check and balance? What if it was $100 billion? What if it was, you know, $500 billion? Can they pour that into the market just to keep it up? Where do they get that money from? I know I go goofy with this, but I can't just go pull a check that I find on the street and write a $10 billion on it and go cash it. Is there any check and balance here? Is any part of the Constitution working? I don't know. How does the Secretary of Treasury, I mean, he has the ability to do some stuff. I get that part. But what's the limit? What if it was $50 billion? What was $100 billion? How does he write that check without Congress saying, here's where it comes from?
Maybe he doesn't know either.
Well, but some the checks cleared if they bought the yen from you or me, I hope we got paid for it.
Well, you know, you probably know a lot more than I ever did about how to mask, you know, financial transactions, or to, you know, create a smokescreen of where this money originated. And, you know, this is what money laundering is, and it's obscuring the source, or the, you know, the from moment to moment where something has been, and deciding this is the same money we're talking about here, but it's just been transformed into something benign or meant to distract us. But I just think at this level, when we're talking in the billions, just maybe on one day, is there any kind of, you know, mechanism that's working here in the public sphere that people can analyze, and financial, you know, fund managers and everything else are going to say, gee, that's the money that needs to be over here, or came from this debt that was being paid back under the table from some other country for God knows what, when. And I have just, you know, decided that there's so much stuff off the books that it's not like the money was necessarily just printed. But it's been somewhere, or somebody's been hanging on to it. Now, finally, it's available for whatever needs to be done that's more important at the moment.
Well, the thing is,
there isn't any way for you or I to trace it and to say this is, you know, off of this ledger now. And now
you know what, though, Jay? Yeah, you can't. Don't take this wrong. When it comes to this kind of stuff, it's just like the puts that were bought before, and I was at, what the hell was I? I was, John and I might have been on the score at the time. And, you know, we were getting calls. Well, you know, the money came from here and there, and I go, look, one thing I know, there's a few things that people know, right, is every single currency futures transaction I mean, you know, that stuff, some of that stuff's done between is bank to bank. I don't think it was all just in the futures. But someplace, somewhere. Matter of fact, the guy in the SEC was on the air with me. He was looking for Jan. I'm talking to this goofball from the SEC. And he starts talking about the puts that were bought before 9/11. And I go, you know, I said, I'm not Jan. By the way, my name's Tom. But the guy says, well, what do you do? I said, well, I own a brokerage firm. Well, you know, we're trying to find this stuff. And I go, well, I said, what do you mean you're trying to find it? He goes, we're trying to find, you know, the people who bought this stuff. And I said, look, if it was done through my firm, by the way, which it wasn't, we know the person's bank account. We know where the cash came from. If he bought the puts and he's sending the money, it's a wire transfer or a check. It's from Chase. It's from someplace. And, oh, by the way, here's the check number. Here's the account number. You can have a million shadow corporations, Jan, but when you write somebody a check for a currency or a stock transaction, someplace, somewhere, the other guy on the other side of the transaction gets paid, and he gets paid from someplace. It's not a mystery. Somewhere at the end of the 15 different corporations, there's somebody with a bank account, and it came out of there. And you can trace it without a whole lot of problem, if you want to. I mean, other kinds of stuff, Bitcoin, I don't know how that all works. But I know for sure that if somebody called up PTI last Thursday and said, because we do futures, assuming it was a futures, we don't do bank-to-bank, obviously, buy me, you know, whatever, X number of yen futures, and somebody called tomorrow from the CFTC and said, who was that guy? We can tell him. This is not a mystery. You know, then the guy's got a bank. Well, if the bank account's bad, the money came from another bank to that bank, you can follow that, too. So the idea that these mystery stuff on these kinds of transactions, somebody paid somebody, right?
And yeah, there's lots of somebodies.
But I'm saying, you know where the check came from. There's lots
of somebodies whose balance sheets are not published and don't use the banking system. So
there's no way you can get money into PTI without coming through. The money has to be wired in here from someplace. It has to be the same name on the account. I mean, this is not, unless the government has other ways of doing stuff, a regular person can't do anything like this. You know exactly who it is.
I agree. I just think I'm just so humble and so jaded that I think it's very possible to move huge sums of money that nobody ever knew existed before in the kind of system that we have. We know how slippery and greasy it is at a very obvious level, but imagine how slippery it is when you get into the really dark corners of it. When it comes to international finance and, you know, debts owed and recording these debts, they never get published. I think at a certain level there'd be no need to, and we're talking beyond, you know, national governments, beyond even individual people, but probably some individual people that you and I never heard of who have the kind of wealth that we're talking about. And I don't want to sound like I'm just a tinfoil hat guy, but it wouldn't surprise me, is what I'm saying, that there's stuff you could move $10 billion in the blink of an eye that nobody could have ever said for sure where that money started out or who's got it at the moment. But we know it's not on the books of any reputable organization or bank. So I just think it wouldn't surprise me at all if this kind of manipulation of the system were possible. It would sort of dovetail with the doubts I have about how a lot of stuff happens without any particular person seeming to have initiated it or, you know, can take responsibility.
Well, you might run into some issues if, say, on our end, if what was the bank, Jan, we were talking about it. Was it Carl? There was a bank. Was it in Tennessee or someplace? There was a CIA front or something along those lines.
I don't remember the name. If it had a name,
well, some organization could apply to become a client here. Okay. And that could be their bank. But the organization, we're going to check the people who are allegedly. Now, this is what we have to do, you know, because the police and the government, they don't do their job. I mean, we have to, if there's three officers at a company, we need to check out if any of those guys are wanted by Interpol, if there's anything we get from the FINRA. We have to check and see if any of these people are shady. Okay, so if the answer is no, and the bank account is okay, I guess we would never know if those three people were front men from the CIA or anything like that, but I can guarantee you we know the account it came from, and the three people whose names are on the account. That we can absolutely tell you. So, now, you know, you're right. Now, if the three people are straw men and those kinds of things, and you know, obviously the CIA probably could outwit that bank and PTI in terms of the people that were there, but we can still tell you at least where it came from and who the three people are supposed to be.
Wasn't it alleged, I mean, at the time of the savings and loan crash in 87, 88, that the CIA had, you know, the money just vanished in a lot of cases, but it ended up, it's believed the CIA had skimmed it and was using it to fund, you know, the crack cocaine explosion on the West Coast and lots of other, you know.
Well, you're talking about the place in Denver.
Right.
You're talking about the place in Denver where Bush's kid was on the board. Silverado. Right?
Yeah, I mean, but that was, but the whole, I mean, not just Silverado. I mean, that whole thing was probably engineered. The system was taken down to bankroll what, you know, intelligence operations, CIA included, but probably others too, had already decided needed to be done with that money. And how dare a local SNL think they have any reason to think it's their depositors' money? It's our money.
Well, I mean, I think there were some of those, but there were regular SNLs. That just the issue there was, you know, for years and years. Again, it's like this thing in 2007. Virtually all of those loans were legit to people. I mean, 80-90% of them. There were a lot of people that had, you know, 5 and 6 places and all that stuff. But the lion's share of all the problem was regular people put down $40,000 on a house that was $250,000, and 6 months later it was $180,000, and they lost all their dough. Right? I mean, But then
remember Wells Fargo, the scandal where they just had all these fake accounts.
Well,
made up names, you know, to boost their, you know, their bonus or whatever, that all these accounts that they had opened, they weren't real people. Where was the money? I don't know. But the whole thing was a complete sham.
Well, I think that was kind of another issue. I mean, again, a lot of this stuff, and I sure as hell don't know all the answers. I'm not a banking expert, but the guys that were, the Wells Fargo thing, a long time ago, when we first started PTI, Dan went into my brother, went to Harris. And he put together a whole banking relationship with, you know, dear departed Harris. And it was a great thing. Everybody, you know, as long as you deposited paycheck direct, everybody got an account. And we didn't, you know, they weren't going to charge anybody any fees or anything. And it was, as long as we kept the main account there. I mean, my brother, as usual, did a spectacular job setting us up. This is, for God's sake, 30-some years ago. And as time goes by, but I'll bet I had a savings account and other kinds of things that I never used. I mean, I had my account here but I think what Wells Fargo did is if you went in, and Kevin, we'll talk about this on Wednesday, but he says in a bank, you always want to get as many accounts as you can. So if somebody opens up an IRA there, even if it's not funded, or you open up a savings account, even if there's nothing in it, you touch the person more. I think what Wells Fargo did is they foolishly said, well, we got all these accounts, and we better charge a minimum if they don't use them, like $5 a month or something. And somebody on the board didn't say, well, wait a minute, do these people even know they have an account before they get the $5 bill? I think they were too dumb, they didn't even realize that, John. I think they started, they were charging people for accounts they never even knew they had. But until they did, what's the difference?
Well, just a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you saw the clips from the hearings, but the CEO of Act Blue, which is, you know, the Democrats, you know, grassroots funding mechanism for local races, was testifying. Miss Ford, I can't remember her first name. Ford was the last name, but she pled the fifth in an even more smarmy, smirky way than Fauci did to every question.
Oh God!
Because you know it turned out that, you know, there's people, you know, of very modest means, who maybe gave, you know, $20 to a Democratic candidate one time 20 years ago, and all of a sudden on Act Blue's, you know, ledger showing where this money that they take in from foreign governments and other places they wouldn't disclose, that's why she was pleading the fifth, this some woman had discovered, much to her surprise, that she had made like millions of dollars in contributions in increments of crazy amounts, and she had never done any of this. And it didn't know anything about it. But this, where did that money come from, Tom?
Wait a minute, aren't you the guy who said you're running for mayor and you want me to give you $100 under the table?
Oh, at least there's a check somewhere. But with a stub somewhere. But this is, you know, when she refused to testify to answer the question whether they take money from foreign governments. And they clearly do. But she pled the fifth.
How does a foreign government, how would you, if I was going to run, if you decide to run for mayor, like half the city, and I decided I wanted to support you, I don't know, we have to talk about some views first, but if I wanted to decide to support, who do I even call in like Saudi Arabia? I mean, do I go to the embassy? Do I pick up the phone?
You probably have to call the Saudi Arabia person in Brussels or someplace where they don't live.
How would I even get the guy's phone number? Or do people even use phones anymore?
Fake, too.
Well, I'm not going to get too far with a fake phone number.
That's just pure money laundering, Tom. But the bigger question is, where is all this GD money coming from? Such that they have to split it up into thousands of parcels and assign them to people who know nothing about it.
The idea that we have, you know, individual people can only give a certain amount of dough. Wayne and Andrew, we someplace somewhere, and I know it's been a long time since I was on the board of the CBO. It's been pushing 98, so what is that? 28 years, for God's sake. But the idea that we would have a senator or a representative or somebody come and sit down in the conference room and have some cookies and coffee, and they would tell us what they're doing, and they want to know about what we're doing, and people could ask questions, and the most you could give them was $500. And I see what's going on now. I go, how the hell could all that have changed in 28 years? What series of laws? I mean, the idea that what's his name, Senator? Who's the guy? He's becoming one of the big talkers of the Democratic side, the older guy. I don't know if he's even running again. What tells his name? Warner? Begins with a W. I forget what his name. He's talking about the Supreme Court. He goes, in the last 30 years, has essentially taken apart every attempt at campaign law finance and any kind of laws. They're saying, anybody, if you got money, you can buy whatever you want. And he goes, I don't know how we got there, but that's where we are. Most of that didn't come from Congress. It came from the Supreme Court. I don't think he's wrong about that, but where are we? I mean, it's a long way from giving somebody $500 to come spend 3 hours at your place. It was not like I don't think we were buying anybody for $500. Do you?
No, nobody very important.
No, maybe one of us. I don't even buy Jimmy for $500. He want eight. He'd want six. But you wonder where are we with this? And then you see people. A company going up by, $500 billion in like a week and a half, and you look at everybody else clipping coupons at the grocery store, and you say, wait, this is, we're seeing a separation here like we've never seen before. I don't want the market to go down, do you? I mean, I just want some rationale here, and I don't see where it's going to come from, do you?
No. The plight of the Democrats' fundraising at the moment, at least the DNC, is not, I mean, It shows just how their message isn't really resonating with the average, contributor. But it's a bigger issue. It isn't like there isn't money around going to candidates. It's just not coming through the DNC. We're $14 million in debt right now? Nobody's giving them money. But that doesn't mean candidates can't raise money. You got things like Act Blue that seem to be doing a pretty nice job of taking money in from God knows where, and sending it out to the candidates who need it. So if there's something going on where, the official source for, contributions to campaigns, and where the national party can actually control the kind of candidates that they want to support and give money to the ones that are selling their message and deny funding to the people.
Democrats have always had a problem with that. They never...
Yeah, but and then now, of course, it's now they don't have any money to give to anybody. The DNC, anyway.
Well,
the
Republicans always had, whether you liked it or not, had a somewhat of a central message. I mean, over a long period of time, and people went, all off the reservation on this stuff. But they had a pretty much central. Their program was like less government. It was lower taxes, and there was a central message. And whether they ever paid attention to it once they got in office is another issue. But the fact is, they had more of a. So they've always been able to get more Republicans would be happier have done historically sending a $50 check to the Republican National Committee than ever did the Democrats have always been, you supported the person, not necessarily the party. Now, why one was one way and one was the other, you probably know better than me, but that's why Republicans always had a better computer system. They always had better research. They always had, because they had more dough. Where, you know, Obama raised the dough. I mean, when I worked for Nancy Sheehan, when she was running for treasurer here in Illinois, and it's, you know, many, many years ago, she was successful at fundraising. The party was always on her to give her some of the dough she raised. It wasn't the other way around. Now, I think on the Republican side, it might still be the other way around. If you're somebody they want, they will help you out. I don't think it's like that at all for the Democrats, and it hasn't been for decades.
Well, and you know, when Obama left office, the DNC was in the hole financially. And not as bad as they are now. But you know, the Clinton campaign came in with money from the Clinton Foundation to pay the debts that Obama had, you know, created and left the DNC with. And of course, then she got the power to control the convention and to make sure she was the candidate and not Sanders, which, you know, ruffled a lot of feathers. And now we've got the DNC again in the hole because Kamala Harris spent $1.5 billion. Nobody knows where it went. It didn't go into intelligent messaging, that's for sure. But this is, you know, it's now, you know, it's become kind of a cliche that, you know, why would you give money to the DNC for any reason? Because they don't know how to you know, spend it intelligently, or all they know how to do is to spend it or give it away or somehow lose it. But if that doesn't affect the ability of individual candidates necessarily to raise money, but it certainly is changing the complexion of the party. So that now that the DNC has no power to go out to a local, you know, state organization or a county organization and say, you're not going to back candidate so-and-so because they're just a loon. You got to go for this person because this is a moderate and this is what you need in this district and we need it.
Well, what do you think is going to be the – when is when? When all of a sudden Trump's not a piece anymore of the Republican Party, what's going to be the struggle there between MAGA and other people?
Well, there will be, and believe me, it'll be a struggle very different and maybe more destructive in the long run than what we're looking at the Democrats right now. I don't think that there's been any kind of healing in the Republican Party about how Trump turned the party into one that is what we're looking at right now. But there's enough, you know, pullback or pushback that once it's not Trump, you're going to see a whole different kind of battle being fought for the soul of the party. And given the vacuum on the Democrat side, I suspect that, you know, you're going to see a political climate that's much more extremely polarized than it is right now, if you can envision that.
There was a YouTube thing.
But by having a vacuum, the Democrats have now ceded the momentum to stuff that the Democrat would never have endorsed or could never vote for.
But this, I read a YouTube thing about, there's this guy, he's a you know, he, sort of like us in terms of age and everything, John. And he was talking about, you know, and, you know, the listeners are going to be shocked when they hear this. In the old world that you and I grew up in, I've always been back and forth on who I voted for, but because I was always pretty much in the middle, and I could either be, right now, if I had to put myself, I'd say I'm on an old scale. I'm probably 10-15% to the right of middle. And I could either vote for happily vote for a moderate Republican or a Democrat that knows how to add. I mean, that is somebody who has some common sense in the middle. And I really don't care if it's 10 or 15% one way or the other of the middle. I don't know. And this guy basically described where I am. He goes, I want to be able to vote for a moderate Republican, where Republicans used to stand for. And he goes, when am I going to get to do that again? And I'm thinking, well, it's going to be a while. I mean, maybe never. I mean, because that's right where I am. This guy's talking, it sounded like me, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, I was listening to some podcasts a week or two ago, and they were talking about, you know, what had happened in the Maine race with Graham Plantner, and, you know, now Troy Jackson, the new candidate, and now the Democrats don't know kind of what to do with the farthest left wing of their party, except to just go along with it and, you know, say they support it and they have a big tent, blah, blah, blah. And somebody brought up the case of David Duke when he ran for governor of Louisiana as a Republican. This is back in the 90s, early 90s, I think. And the Republicans were so horrified by his having become the, you know, Republican candidate that they, you know, the party came out and endorsed the Democrat opponent. Now, I can't imagine something like that on the stage today, where you would have, you know, like the DNC saying, you know, don't vote for this crazy socialist who calls himself a Democrat. This time around, vote for the Republican candidate because they'll at least not screw you completely.
Well, the guy in Maine, John, the guy they get just is out. All right, so Democrats in some areas feel that their party is becoming miscast, right? So they pick a guy, a loud, brutish, insulting, pretty ignorant guy who kind of abuses women. Gee, where do you suppose they got that idea? Is the guy being somebody who could win?
Despite not having done anything.
Yeah, despite not having done anything in politics before. Where do you think they got that idea? You don't have to look any further.
Well, not from somebody who'd done something.
Okay, but what did Trump ever do except do a TV show? I'm saying that's the model.
It's not all he did. I mean, all of it is a lot more than Plattner.
Okay, but I'm saying, where do you suppose they got that idea?
Can't compare the two, Tom.
Why? What are you talking about? You absolutely can. They both like to insult people. They both aren't very bright, and they both abuse women. Why?
Tom,
why?
We all insult people.
I
like doing it sometimes.
Well, I mean,
but there's nothing unique about that.
I'm saying,
I wish more politicians were as insulting as they appear to be, but they're afraid to be seen as being. I mean, this is the cowardice.
Well, there is a difference between telling the truth and being insulting.
Well, sometimes they coincide.
Well, duh. But I mean, you know, I'm saying the Democrats are being. You know what?
The culture of Maine as a state. And
I've never been there, so I don't know. All I know is the people who go there say that nobody likes them when they go there.
Well, it's got an edge to it that, you know, they're proud of. You know, it's a tough place to live. Your buddy
Bush was up there.
Yeah, as a resort.
By the way, do they still own that place?
It's a great place to go and hang out, like, you know, Murder, She Wrote. In a picturesque little town on the coast, but
the Bushies
still want to live through the winters there.
The Bushies still own that joint? I think they must.
I think so. I'm sure they do. And there are other. This is an artist colony and stuff too. And a lot of people went there because it was, you know, cool in the summer and, you know, get away from the heat in New York and everybody else. Well, but I just think that there's no kind of honor among the politicians now where you would ever advise somebody because everything has gotten so out of whack. We're going to tell you to cross party lines, and this time around to bring things back somewhat to the center where they belong.
They won't, if they think a felon's going to win in their party, they'll let them run. They don't care.
Well, and, you know, part of it, you know, I'd say it's due to the fact that Sanders got screwed several times by the party that he was trying to take over himself. I mean, he caucused with the Democrats, but he was not proud of being a Democrat.
I don't know what.
And they gave him more reason than ever not to trust the Democrats, and that's why they're paying the price now.
Well, why did they owe him anything when he didn't even call himself a Democrat?
But he should have been the candidate in 2016.
Oh, God, please.
I'm just saying. And of course, the Democrats didn't want.
Would he have been insulted if I sent him a gift and it wasn't money, it was a calculator?
I mean, but the process was in running all in his favor, and the Clinton wing wasn't going to let that happen because they thought she could beat Trump, and they knew that Trump would beat him, so they didn't want that to happen. So they you know, pulled the nomination, pretty much twisted it in the way.
Hey, we got to
fix the debates, everything. You know?
We got to go to break. But hey, on Wednesday, what I'd like to do, and start with my experience over in Germany, when we start calling people socialists and this being capitalist. I think we should get our definition straight, and I'm not even sure I can define what we are or what Germany was when I was over there, and maybe Larissa will help us out with that. But it's very interesting when you start putting labels on people, and the people don't even know what the hell they put a label on themselves. They don't even know if they know what they're talking about. It's just Because I think some
is hard to imagine any European country today with a truly Christian democratic party.
I don't know. I don't, none of those places. Well, I know Germany when I was there in the 90s was. It may have been capitalism in somebody's definition, but certainly not in ours. I don't know what you. No. Anyway, S&P futures up 40, NASDAQ futures up 50. Looks like we're going up again today, although we were up more when we came in. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 53. Individual stocks. We've got Meta, which got its ass kicked last week, is up 10.50. Google's up 6.50. We've got Apple up 260. They were getting trounced too. And Microsoft up another like 10 bucks. That thing has done nothing but go straight up now after nobody wanted it. Now everybody wants it. Pretty crazy. We have over in Asia, these guys, again, they were the yen had this massive move. Nikkei's down 607 today, but it was up a huge on Friday. It's 1%. Hang Seng up 124.5%. Shanghai down 22.6%. So not as bullish over there today, but like I said, they had a huge move on Friday. Over Europe, we got the DAX up 340, that's 1.3%. Stock futures jumped 500 points after Trump calls off planned attacks. I think he was called off from being called off by Saudi and those guys. FTSE up 5, that's the story anyway. FTSE up 5, call that flat. CAC around up 105, 1.3. So with the exception of the FTSE, everybody's bullish over in Europe. Bonds are coming back the other way. The first move we've seen down interest rates in a while. 10 years, 4.67, still well over to 4.5, but the first time in a while it's not going up. So that's probably one of the reasons why the market ought to be up today, because interest rates are at least down a little bit. Oil down 5.64, that's a big number. Under 80 bucks, 79.03. We've got RBOB down 11 cents, 2.99. So under 3 bucks. So your gas probably should be under $4 at some point this week, you would hope. We've got gold is up $1.90, 41.08. It bounced back a little bit on Friday. Silver up 11 cents, 57.90. Going back and forth in this range here, but it doesn't really look like it's breaking out to 5,000 or anything. At least it doesn't look like that way to me. Foreign exchange, again, the yen is 156.73, a far cry from the 163 last week. $10 billion of our money and Japan, a combined intervention. So there you go. Boy, you'd love to have the, you got a front run that one. You're going to have done pretty good. I just suspect some people might have. Bitcoin down 781, 62,546. Again, pretty comfortably over the 60,000 number, but well off the 64 it was last week. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. You set to a boring-ass Cub game.
Yeah, I did. It is the 3rd of August. It is 7:35. As you had mentioned, the Cubs lost 2-1. The usual, they put people on and can't get them across the plate. The Sox did win big yesterday, 9-1. In traffic, we have on the inbound Kennedy, 15 minutes from the inbound side. On the inbound Edens, it's 37, so that's building. The inbound Eisenhower is at 31, and the inbound Dan Ryan is at 20. weather-wise, in Chicago, it is 67 degrees with a high of 79. Now, in Phoenix, it's hot. It is 97 degrees now with a high of 115. Back to you, Chief.
Have you ever been any place where it was 115?
Yep. Yes.
Do we have Audrey?
No, you got me.
We got Nance. Yeah, hey, Nance, how are you?
Good morning, Nancy.
How are you?
It's
good. How about you?
Good.
What's the good word? Your friend Audrey was babysitting the little pooch over the weekend.
Yes, I heard that.
What a little character that little girl is. She's old. Get hold of this, John and Jimmy. I go over and Aud was watching her, so she thought she got dumped by her family, so she's kind of moping around, looking like she's, you know, look like she's half dead. She's like 16, 17, so I go out, I'll take her out for a walk, maybe she'll fire up a little bit. So I kind of wake her up and, you know, kind of drag her, put the leash on. All of a sudden she gets the leash on, she perks up. We go out the front door, she like races ahead of me for like 2-3 blocks. She had nothing but energy. What are you, the biggest sandbagger that ever walked? I'm like, God bless. I'm like, good for you. Then I bring her back, and there she goes right back in the bathroom, goes to sleep on a rug. I'm going, what is with this thing? But she, you know, you just never know, Nance. I mean, but anyway, cute little thing.
I thought she was 19.
I think she's 16, 17, but she's up there.
Yeah, and I met her, and she, gosh, the night I met her, she couldn't, now this was not this weekend, but it was like she couldn't move.
Yeah, well.
And she actually walked.
Oh, God, she was yanking me down a block.
Hmm.
And you feed her, and Audrey's got this standard poodle, but she's got the bowls up. So the little one eats all her chow, and all of a sudden she's up on her hind legs eating the stuff out of Abby's bowl. I go, she certainly resurrects her chow and walks.
Unbelievable.
Well, they all got their little personality, don't they?
The dog whispers, huh?
Yeah, something, yeah. But anyway, Nance, what's going on in Euro? Finally, you get a little bit of respite, and the interest rates are coming back a little bit today, but it's been a steady march up. That today we've got a, you know, pretty good pull back. So we were over 4.7 in the 10-year, now we're 4.67. It's still not great, but it's better than over 4.7. Is that, when does that filter through, or does it take more than a few days?
Oh, no, it takes more than a few days.
Where, if somebody were going to call you up today and said, I need to close a mortgage right now today, what's the number?
Maybe 6.75.
Okay, so it's is that about as high as it's been in a while?
Oh, it's the highest it's been. I mean, it is the highest it's been. There's just no two ways around it.
Yeah.
I wish it wasn't so, guys, but it's definitely so.
Jan, what do you think? What do you think of that, Jan? It's kind of getting up there.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of meant a slowdown to you, Nancy.
Yeah. It's going to be kind of a dead day, I'm sure.
Well, the numbers were only 21% of, this is last month, only 21% of houses are first-time buyers, which is that an all-time low? Or it's got to be real, got to be pretty low.
I think it is an all-time low.
And you know what? I can't say. I mean, we've had so many different things happen. Let's see. Today's rate's supposed to be 6.83.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just crazy.
That's for 30-year. What do you need down for that?
3%.
How do we go from oh man, we're going back to 20% after 2007. We're back down to 3. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just saying it. But the whole thing was blamed on too little down payment. We're right back down there again.
It's always been that. It's always been that. It's been at 3, 3.5 for a long time already.
When was it? When you had to come down? I think when I bought my place in Beverly, I had to come down. I had to pony up 20. Of course, that was a long time ago.
Oh yeah, I mean I had to too, but it. Time that just shows how old we are.
I suppose. Yeah. Well,
we're not supposed to talk about that.
Well, the houses were a lot cheaper. That part I know.
Yeah, it's got to be a concession to just the amount of money that represents in the house sales today compared to just not that long ago.
Yeah.
I don't.
The new news today is the new condo laws are going into effect from Fannie and Freddie.
I saw that, Nance. What does that mean?
It's going to change the way. I think it's going to change the whole entire thing. So in a condo, the building has to be, or the complex has to be, reviewed, and they had all these places that have been reviewed for years.
Lance, I think we lost her.
Lance, you blinked off. Well, Jan, what's she talking about? I read something about that new rule coming in. What do you have any idea what it is?
It looks. I think it's kind of what's been done on some state levels too, where it means greater scrutiny to the financial health of condo projects. So, you know, what they've got in reserves, what they have in, you know, projects that are, you know, that need to be done, like maintenance or structural repair, or, you know, stuff that's going to cause, you know, special assessment of some duration to every owner in the building, and how that affects the ability of a borrower to keep afloat when you've got, you know, if you have to bail out your condo association at some point because they're undercapitalized, or there's some, you know, earthquake or whatever that makes everybody on the hook for it. I think that's going to affect, you know, the mortgage industry pretty deeply. And Florida did that, I think, a year or two ago, and because they had so much trouble with sinkholes and deferred maintenance on buildings, and all of a sudden they put like a floor percentage of you know, whatever the condo project represented in wealth for the number of units it had. And that was a formula they came up with, where you got to have, you know, a fund available at least X number of dollars. And it really, you know, put the kibosh on a lot of condo sales, because all of a sudden the price of the assessment, you know, started to throw everything else out of whack.
Still no Nance, Jimmy?
Back, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, are you there?
She's back. Okay.
Kevin, John was explaining what he thinks is this new look. Let me ask you a question. This is ancient history, right? But just maybe as a question for the listeners, a contributor to the show that died a couple of years ago, Robin, owned a place up on Sheridan and like Belmont. And it was a condo building and, you know, all that stuff. But down the block, there was this gorgeous building. Jan, you know, I'm talking about the Briar?
Oh, yeah.
But the place was, I mean, a beautiful building. Nance, it was a bleep hole in terms of... they went to do the roof, and they found out all the, you know, the brick under the roof. The last guy had put the thing in wrong, so the roof had mold in there, and they had to replace it. Whatever. The special assessments were to the moon, to the point where if you sold the place to anybody, you know, and we're talking about, they weren't, you know, it wasn't like they were 500 grand like they are now. It was, you know, probably in the ones. The selling person had to put 30 grand in escrow for the next 2 or 3 years, because they just knew more assessments were coming their way. The person who converted the building did such a horse bleep job. How was that handled back then on the mortgage? Was it just something? I mean, is that sort of what they're trying to talk about now?
I believe so, and I believe that it doesn't have anything to do with the mortgage. It's just got to do with the viability of the property.
Yeah.
It's, in other words, would you want to buy a place where you know that over the next 5 years you're going to have to put at least $6,000 in minimum?
Well, if the person I bought it from was forced to leave it there for that contingency, I might roll with it.
Okay, but That's the problem, Tom. If 50 people have to put that in and only two can, I don't care if somebody else pays it or not, you're not going to want to be in that building.
Okay, so that's a whole different... You're saying that even if I think my share is $6,000 and the seller goes, here, I'll put it in escrow for you, that if all of a sudden there's 50 people there and 25 can't pay, the $6,000 becomes 12. That's a problem.
It could be, yeah. It's a problem. Well, how do you live there? And that's what's happening. Remember, and we were talking about in Florida, they're still not, a lot of these places still aren't even fixed yet, rebuilt, nothing. They've got, yep, people are just walking away.
My sister-in-law's cousin, they've yet to tell her whether they're going to fix the place or not, whether it's structurally fixable. They haven't even come to that conclusion. And she's paid, what's that, 3 years now? She's paying her mortgage every month.
So this is what they're trying to avoid. They're trying to get an independent study done on each of these buildings. It's going to have to, you know, this report's going to have to kind of be, it's going to be very extensive. And I can't remember what they call it, but I did finance something maybe 2 years ago where the person is buying downtown. They already had this serve. They already had this whole thing done.
You know, it's funny. When I lived at 70 West Huron for a while, and it went condo, I didn't buy it. I had a chance to. Probably should have. I got this thing that was, what do you call it, John? It looked like a big honking notebook. It had to be how many hundred pages of every place in the neighborhood that might have every gas tank, every gas station that of something that might be leaking. This massive environmental survey and history of the building and repairs. I got that. I mean, doesn't everybody?
No, they don't. Mm-mm.
Was that just when you convert? But I mean, you would think
buildings of a certain size, a smaller, a three flat that turns condo or something. I don't think they had to do environmental studies, but depending on, if it's a high rise and it's in a densely populated area, it's probably regional too. I bet you would have to have a pretty in depth. Environmental impact report for what is going on around the building that the building is on control.
But they had everything in the building there that they'd repaired, that they'd spent money on, and estimates of air conditioning in 5 years and 10 years. I mean, it was soup to nuts, this thing.
Yeah.
They don't have, that is not going on now.
Okay.
That's not going on now at all. So it's just going to come back, and I think it is. I heard John say that he feels like, it could put the kibosh on a lot. I think that's true. I think the condominium market now will change. And
I'm just looking
prices may go down.
There's some stuff I found online, Nancy. It says that if you have, a condo that allows for short-term rentals or like daily rentals or like Airbnb kind of stuff where the owner's never there, those are barred from, Fannie Mae lending. So I think they see that as something that affects the value of the entire building when you got people coming and going like that. So a condo would either have to amend its declaration, stop that from happening if they want anybody to be able to use Fannie Mae loans and buy. It's a pretty big change, really.
Yeah. So they're saying that Airbnbs are barred?
Well, It's just, I'm looking at this, short-term rental units. Buildings that operate like hotels, motels, or allow daily short-term rentals are strictly barred from financing. So, and I would bet that would apply
to... So we're not talking about cutting it down, we're talking about barring them. It's a big number.
Yeah. So, that's
going to... See, that's going to hurt in the resort towns, then. Right?
Well, what is that?
You're going to, people are stuck. They can't sell.
Yeah. So this is, it's going to be a big change. It really is. But they're also looking for these places who just don't even really have anything in their reserves at all.
There's a lot of places like that.
Yeah, there really are. I mean, I'm not being critical. I'm just saying they've been operating this way for years. Everything's fine. They have special assessment. People pay up. That's it. That's not going to happen. I mean, it's going to become problematic. And there is financing available for non-warranted condos. It's just if you want Fannie and Freddie to buy the loan, then... now there's a definite hard line that if you cross it, you're going to have a problem.
So let me get this straight. If one person, Jimmy lives in a rental building, but say the place went condo, if one person goes Airbnb, all of a sudden nobody can get a mortgage in the place?
Well, if the declaration permits that, they may be in violation of something. So the fact there is one doesn't mean that nobody else can get a mortgage. But I think there are some kind of declarations in some resort places, like you say, Nancy.
It's going to hurt the resort towns. It's going to hurt Florida.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are built along the beaches, along the shore. So you're going to see Wisconsin, Michigan, all of that. It's not going to be pretty for a while, guys. It's just not.
What's the cost that it's going to add to the mortgage? Who picks up for this new inspection?
The association. It's got nothing to do with the mortgage. It's got nothing to do with the mortgage. It's just if you're using Fannie and Freddie, I think they do about 92% of by 90% of loans in the United States. So if you want them to be the holder of that product, then these are the rules you're going to have to follow. There are outlets for non-warrantable condos. That's not the issue. The issue is it's just the pricing you'll see is for warrantable condos.
Okay, so
this is all on the association. It's not nothing to do with the mortgage or Fannie and Freddie. They're just not going to finance these types of loans anymore.
So somebody comes to you buying a condo, wants a mortgage somewhere, the condo association has to have. Do you then have to include their policy book with the mortgage?
Yeah,
we've always had to.
Okay.
Yeah, they're black and the
so you got to read through there and say, "Oops, these guys allow A, B, and B." Is it up to you to not go to Freddie, or is it up to Freddie to read the damn thing?
It's really at this point in time, it's both.
Okay, so if you shove it through. And Freddie doesn't read it, and they pick up the mortgage, and they find out later they're coming after you, or what?
I'm going to have to buy it back.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've already had this happen already. That's how come I know it's coming.
And what'd you do with it? You own it?
I had to sell it to a non-warrantable, as a non-warrantable condo holder.
You know,
someone
the difference
they finance is non-warrantable.
And to answer Jimmy's question, what was the difference in price?
It depends. I mean, you eat it. You have to eat it. You can't pass it on to the borrower. Borrower closed.
Okay, but I'm saying that was it 6.5 versus 8%, or what?
Yeah, I mean it's at least a percentage more.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So you lose. I mean, I lose. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I lose.
We don't want you losing, Nance.
But I know. But it happens. I mean, it does happen. I have 2 in right now.
Well, when we're out and you offer to pick up the tab, I want to, if you're all winning, I'll let you do it. If you're losing, I don't know if I want you to doing that.
No, that's the way it goes. I mean, and you don't find out until after the fact.
By the way, when the tab comes, you might find Mr. Flanagan in the men's room.
Yeah. No, it's, the one I did, we had no idea that it was going to be considered non-warrantable. Not at all. But you get the loan back. Fannie and Freddie doesn't even say, well, it's our mistake, you know, we okayed it, and then you went on. I mean, you just get it handed back.
How do they have some time limit? Can they do it 2 years from now, or what?
They can do it 10 years from now, as long as they're holding the note. You just don't know when it's going to happen.
They can say, Nancy, it's yours.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep.
I thought the Safe Harbor Act kind of prevents them from doing that after 2 years.
As far as I know, after COVID, they sent a lot of loans back, a lot of bad. They give them back. You can argue about it and take, you know, you can legally get into a big hassle, but from what we have seen, the bottom line is that they're, you know, basically they're not a government agent backed by the government, but they are kind of owned by the government, whether you like it or not. And so you're in court fighting something that the government already, you know, owns. It just was a no-win, and you just wasted more money. You're better off if you just deal with it.
So they'll hire a bank or somebody to service it. So you still write the check out to a bank, right? Not to them.
No, you have to take it. You have to send it back to.
No, I'm saying when you have a loan that's taken over by Fannie Freddie, you don't write the check to Fannie Freddie. You still sell it, write it to the bank that's servicing it, right?
Right. Correct. 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 That is correct.
Well, yes. This seems like a response to what's traditionally been, I think, a hard thing to monitor and control, because there's good condo boards, and there's some not so good condo boards, and people who run a tight financial ship and like doing that stuff, and politics of, you know, handling a board meeting and stuff, and there's others that are pretty slipshod. But I think this is probably a way to get some kind of handle over raising the level of compliance, so that, you know, they're not finding borrowers who can't perform because they've been pummeled with new expenses they didn't have when they first qualified for the loan.
I don't even think it's got anything to do really with the borrowers themselves. I think it's got to do with it forces you to maintain the building. Does that make sense? I mean, I think that's a big portion of what they're going after. They, in other words, if there's a problem, you just can't say, oh, you know, I'm going to kick the can down the road and, you know, I won't be here in 5 years, so what do I care? You know what I mean? They're not, it's just a whole different way of looking at it. And I think it started because of all the stuff that started in Florida where these buildings just started collapsing. I mean, it's not really the borrower, it's more the people that just, the whole building collapsed. I mean, let's say there's 20 people in that building or whatever.
The thing was huge. It was like 12 stories.
See, and the problem is the whole thing is finance. So, I mean, who's really going to eat it? Not the people. It's really the people who hold that paper. Right?
Well, it's one of the reasons why they can't fix all the stuff from the hurricanes, because so many of the engineering companies are already involved in long-term repairs to some of the other buildings that didn't get hit by the hurricanes. And in Florida, it's real tough to be a construction crew that comes in from the outside, right, Jan?
Yeah.
They don't really want, you know, a construction crew coming in from Chicago and all of a sudden setting up shop. So they're totally oversubscribed on their builders and architects. I mean, isn't that part of the problem?
Well, and they've got a lot of endangered structures, too.
Now, remember, we're not talking about townhomes, just condos.
Well, no, a townhome association, that's okay.
Townhomes are okay. Townhomes are okay,
I'm curious as to why that would be, but...
Well, it's you own your land. You
know. I think it's right. I think you're right. I think because they're platted, and we can say, okay, this is yours and this is yours. I think there's a difference, because in a condo, you really don't own the land. And that's, I think, a big portion legally of what they're going after.
Yeah, if your toilet starts leaking in your townhome, it may affect your townhome. It isn't likely to have much to do with your neighbors, I hope. But in a condo, if the toilet upstairs is leaking, and every toilet below that starts leaking too, you know, you got trouble for the whole building.
Well, I know, I had a condo when I first turned 21. I bought a condo. And...
So 10 years ago.
I wish. And I know I would happen to be, it was in the morning, it was early, maybe like 6, 5:30. And I was in the kitchen, and all of a sudden I had all this junk in my sink, and I'm like, what the heck is this? You know what I mean? And it just was coming up through the drain, and I thought, well, now that's crazy. And I called the plumber, and the plumber said, this is coming from somebody else's unit. It's not your unit that's clogged, it's somebody else's. And it took a couple days, and then finally I went to the guy right next door to me, not across the hall, but the other way, and I knocked on his door, and he saw it was me, and he didn't want to open it. I pushed the door open and walked right to his sink, and I said, it's you. And he completely denied there was even anything wrong.
God.
And I remember thinking, like, this is nuts. This is just nuts that this is going on. And I had the same problem in the garage. If it, I would have raw sewage come up through the drain. And they all felt bad for me. They all this, that, the next thing. But they didn't want to get it fixed because they didn't have to.
We got a dash here, but one of Jimmy, my buddies, go nameless, just rented a place in the old Montgomery Ward building, and he really loves the apartment, and he's got the parking spot downstairs. Evidently, didn't he say, Jimmy, the lowest level of the garage with all the rain last week, the the river sort of busted in down there, and a bunch of people's cars are under like 3 feet of water. Now, who covers all that? Is that the condo building's insurance? Is it yours? Is it your auto? Who is it?
It would be the condo building's insurance. That's assuming that you could say that it is not an act of God, because the insurance company is probably going to take that claim and use that not to pay out.
Ugh.
But yes, I mean, the Montgomery Ward building, probably the lowest part of that garage is 10, maybe 15 feet below the river.
Oh, at least, yeah. Yuck. So, Nance, give us a shameless plug. Sounds like you could... You need some people. We all need more business. You could use a few people wanting to do some nice young couples that have the dough that want to buy a house. They should call you, right?
Yeah. My number is 708-341-9601. 708-341-9601.
All right. Take care, Nance. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, John, thank you. We'll probably see you on Wednesday, and we'll talk about definitions, economic definitions. Because you know what? If you got some answers... I just have questions on this stuff. I don't know how to define any of these things anymore.
I'll be pulling on your brain.
So. Oh, God. SP Futures up 44. NASDAQ Futures up 60. Jimmy, good job. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.
What I have for you, Mr.